originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. This is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, along with my usual entry mate. You know him as the Pontiff of the Pick Four. He is retired top trainer Jude Feld, and we are together again in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios for another brand new edition of Trainer Talk, and want to make sure that we welcome everybody tuning in on Sirius 219, XM Channel 201, and all of you tuning in worldwide with our live streaming on your computer or your mobile device. You're doing that at horseracingradio.net, and we are happy to have you back on board for yet another exciting hour, no doubt about it, because Jude, one thing that's always cool about this show is when you get a chance to visit with a trainer that you've never talked with before, and believe it or not, after doing this show for, what, 5 or 6 years now, there are still plenty of trainers we have not spoken with. Tonight, we get a chance to do that.
Yeah, it's always good to put a face to the name in the program, so to speak, even though we're on radio. And this trainer we have on tonight, I mean, I've been betting on his horses for a long time. I know he's highly skilled, so it's going to be fun to talk to him and hear his story.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He is a 50-year-old native of Belleville, Illinois, and began training on his own in 2009. Since that time, he has saddled 1,034 career winners. He's closing in on, how about this, $18 million in purse earnings. He's racked up multiple training titles at Fairmount Park and at Hawthorne. After spending his last two winters in New Orleans, he's shifted his string to an even warmer climate. He's racing at Gulfstream's championship meet in Hallandale Beach, Florida. And he is trainer Scott Becker, who joins us now on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Scott, appreciate the visit, my friend. Thanks for the time.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Sounds like it's been quite a ride for you, my friend, after growing up in Belleville and now talking about saddling 1,034 career winners. Impressive.
Thank you much. Everything's been going pretty well. I've had a very good owner over that time that I've been blessed to work with, and I couldn't ask for anything better.
Yeah, we're going to spend plenty of time talking about your current owner because, as you said, he's been with you for a very long time now since you started, and he's been a big part of your success. But let's kind of backtrack even a little bit more. Horse racing has always kind of been in your pedigree, hasn't it?
Yes, I've had grandfathers that have had horses back to the 50s.
And those individuals, did they train? Were they riders? Were they owners? How did that work?
The grandfather on my mother's side was just an owner who had his own farm. And then on my dad's side, his dad was a trainer, and he was a trainer.
So three generations of trainers. You must have picked up tons of knowledge along the way. Were you a barn rat growing up?
You know, I was in the summer. I was a kid that took the programs to school with me and played around and made up and called my own races and couldn't wait till the summer to go to the track with my dad.
What track was that? Was that Fairmount?
Mainly Fairmount and Kokia Downs when I was very young.
Oh, wow. Kokia Downs. There's a name from the past, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was very young then.
So you would call your own races. Did you want to be a track announcer?
Yeah, you know, I guess I did.
Were you pretty good at it?
You know, I had two other brothers, and I would let them pick the horses, and I would call the races.
That's good. I like that. Well, we already got one Becker that's a track announcer. We have to deal with him all the time.
Yeah, any relation to...
That was just another way to keep racing going when we wasn't at the track, I guess.
Any relation to Kurt Becker, the track announcer at Keeneland?
No, not at all.
All right.
I have no other relation in racing at all.
So tell me about your grandfather and what he was doing when he was involved with the sport.
Well, my one grandfather, he was just mainly an owner. He had horses dating back with an old veteran named Ron Goodrich.
Okay.
And my stepdad's father, John Full, he trained probably in the 60s at Kokia and Fairmont. And they would always ship to Chicago during the winter months and things to Hawthorne and Sportsman's Park and maybe a few to Arlington in the summer.
So that's a circuit that you've been around basically your whole life. That's very unique.
Yeah, but there's been a steady decline in racing here in Illinois, which has compromised a lot of opportunities.
Yeah, where do things stand with the racing industry in Illinois now, Scott?
Well, I think right now everything's at a standstill with them introducing a new governor next week and see where anything goes from there, if they're able to get any kind of help, whether it's gaming or sports betting or anything else in general.
What's the key to rejuvenating the racing product in the state, in your opinion?
Well, I don't know. This day and age, everything is done between off-track betting and wagering online. And I don't think you get to these other tracks, the people that come to the races as much. And, the purses are generated more by your on-track betting, and it's just not there as much anymore in Illinois.
Yeah, I think that's the whole sport, actually. And I think the problem comes in is the percentages decrease when the bets are made online. There's a bigger percentage of on-track handle, but getting people, especially in larger cities, like Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, it's harder to get people to come to the races on a daily basis because of the traffic. And it can take hours out of your day just to get there when you can bet online and watch the race from home.
Yes, that's a very good point. Your percentages go down from the track to off-track betting to online wagering. There's the lowest takeout, so the smallest gain for structures.
So how does that affect somebody like yourself, Scott, as an Illinois native, as somebody who has grown up there with a family who is so entrenched in the racing industry in the state? How does that change your approach? I mean, you're taking horses now to Florida. You've been in New Orleans the past couple of years. Have you had to adjust the way you run your business now?
Yes, I've had to, because as owner, actually, we use Fairmont Park year round and more or less as a training center for young horses to go on to other places, whether we ship to Kentucky or somewhere else or Chicago. And if they're not good enough, then we stay here and participate a little bit with the lower ranked horses. And we have our own farm where he breeds. We have a stallion there and we breed there too. And I'm involved in every aspect from foaling to breaking to running, wherever we're at.
Yeah, and by the way, that's owner William Sturitz, who is a former CEO and president of Ralston Purina, current president of Westgate Equity Partners and the Westgate Group. He's also the owner of Fairmount Park, so that's a nice little feather in your cap there, too, to be able to train for the owner of the track. That helps.
Yeah, yes, it does help. He's the main reason that has kept this place going probably for the last over 10 years. Without him, I'm sure there wouldn't be no Fairmount Park at all.
Yeah, he probably has to go into pocket sometimes to keep the place up and running, but that's a tribute to him and how much he loves our sport.
Yes, he's given back a lot, especially in the Illinois program, and You know, we do purchase horses at sales, and it just in Illinois for an open runner, it just isn't economically feasible anymore.
Scott Becker, our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Scott, where did that relationship begin with Bill Sturitz?
He had a former trainer named Terry Justice that I had horses with back through the 90s that I had worked for before, and he brought me in with him in 2006, and then I just took over in 2009 when Terry decided to go on to do other things with his family and get out of the horse business.
What do you remember about those early days when you were just getting started on your own?
We had a little smaller operation. It was a little bit easier then. And now it takes up days and nights very much.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got a lot on your plate with delivering babies and breaking yearlings. And you're a one-stop shop.
Yeah, it made me quit my second passion of playing hockey part-time.
Have you given that up completely?
I have no time for that anymore.
You've given
no time for it anymore.
No time anymore to skate. What about when you come here to Kentucky? Do you ever run into a guy named John Sakura and get a chance to skate with him?
No, I have not.
He's got a nephew on the Blackhawks.
No, I have not. I've been trying to skate with a friend of mine, Larry Rebelli, out of Chicago. He has a son that is a real good player, and I've been trying to get to skate with him one time.
Did you play competitively in school too?
Yeah, yes, I did.
Where'd you skate?
In St. Louis.
Okay.
St. Louis area.
Yeah, that has to be tough to walk away from that. But like you said, you just don't have time anymore. If you're doing the farm stuff and you're doing the training stuff, when do you sleep?
Yeah.
On the plane, right?
Yeah, on the plane and in the in front of the barn and the truck.
So, Scott, you said you had a much smaller operation when you started. How many horses are you up to at this point?
Well, right now we have I have 30 at Hawthorne. We have 47 just turned 2-year-olds.
Wow.
Just got through breaking the last group that we brought over to the track, put a couple weeks on time on them and turn them back out for a little while. And then we have numerous horses at the farm, about 17 brood mares and a stallion, and we're just waiting to start polling season here next month.
What led to the decision to take a string to Florida this year?
Well, the owner kind of decided he's like the Florida sales, and he's had a home in Florida for many, many years, and he just decided to buy some more Florida breeds and go down there and keep a string down there year-round and see what happens.
Yeah, I guess it makes sense. If you're going to buy Florida breeds, the incentive program that the FTBOA puts together with a lot of the different Florida bred days is – it's really strong, and you can do pretty well if you have a good Florida bred, can't you, Scott?
I think you can, and, you know, you have good weather for year-round training there, and you're basically running year-round there. There's not really much time in between as long as Gulfstream West is running a meet.
Yeah, so you can basically, stable at the track for most of the year, if not all the year.
Yes, correct. So, like I said, I figured I would take 10 down there and get my feet wet and hopefully get some more stalls here after this meet. I have 30 of those 47 2-year-olds are Florida breds.
Wow.
Yeah, that's impressive. You know, Scott, you don't win over 1,000 races in this game, and you don't earn nearly $18 million in purses without having a strong philosophy and conviction in your approach to what you're doing. So when you think about the Scott Becker philosophy of training racehorses, how would you describe it?
Well, when you have a large operation, sometimes people think that you're doing the less that factory training job, but we don't. I mean, we try to individualize each horse. They're all different. We don't train much of any of them the same. You take a little basic concept, but there's a lot of different things involved in training the big number head of horses. That's why guys that I admire, like Brad Cox and the guys that have big operations, and they got to have a lot of good people working for them.
Yeah, that's one thing that every trainer that has horses spread out across the country, when they've joined us on this program, Scott, they've said the same thing. Just like you pointed out, you have to have a good team. Otherwise, you can't be successful. So for you, talk about some of the people that have helped you and helped you as part of your team.
Yeah, I have a guy down in Florida now. He's actually an uncle of mine by marriage, John Poole, who was my stepdad's brother. He has worked for me for the last 7-8 years, and he travels to the other tracks always with the other horses, and he gives good feedback to me when I'm not there. And another guy, Daniel Herrero in Chicago, that does the same when I'm not there. They give me good feedback on everything, keep me up to date, and I can basically tell them what to do from there. Good grooms also.
Yeah.
Good exercise riders. There's a lot top to bottom.
Yeah.
You got to have the best you can get.
Yeah, it takes a village, right?
Yeah, it takes a village, and sometimes it feels that way.
Yeah.
You know, because your help sometimes becomes your family. I mean, you're with those people quite a bit, and even if you're traveling between several tracks, you still, you know, get to know them very well because you spend so much time with them.
Scott,
it helps, and it's hard to keep the same help if you're traveling different tracks. Some that have families, but they don't want to do it anymore.
How about your family, Scott? Do you have kids, a wife at home? How does it work?
I have a daughter who is 30 and a granddaughter who is 8. And I have a wife, my second wife with no kids at home the last 15 years.
So are they involved in any way in the training operation or no?
No, she's not. She's a physical therapist. She has her own career, but she does like horse racing.
That's always helpful to have a wife that enjoys the sport.
Yeah, she was just down at Gulfstream with me over Christmas for 8 days, so she enjoyed it.
Physical therapist. So, okay, she works with human athletes, right? Or at least recovering athletes, let's put it that way. Do you ever, like, bounce some ideas off of her and see if there's any similarities between working with human athletes and equine athletes?
You know, kind of on certain types of injuries and things, we kind of come across a little bit of the same I don't have the right word for it, but we do.
Well, like treatments and
like
stuff
that on certain injuries.
Certain treatments, has she helped you with any ideas, like, you know, maybe you should use this type of treatment on a horse's injury, or have you thought about this, that kind of thing?
Not really. They're really, she deals in a lot of different types of rehabilitation that doesn't really go on with the thoroughbreds in the same way.
How about your daughter and your granddaughter? Are they into the horse racing side of things too? Do they enjoy it?
Yeah, they enjoy coming out to the races and that. They do.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, cheering dad on and cheering grandpa on, I'm sure. They like when you get to the winner's circle. And again, he's Scott Becker. He's done that plenty of times in his career, more than 1,000, as a matter of fact. He grew up playing hockey, as you heard, and now training racehorses for a living. And no time for hockey anymore. He can't skate as much as he would like. But maybe someday, Scott, you kind of get back to that. Can you see yourself eventually making time for some other hobbies like that?
Oh, sure. I'm sure sometime, as long as I'm able to put them on and not too old for it, I'll sure get back on the ice.
Yeah, that, good thing your wife's a physical therapist then. You start skating again. You'll need her.
Yeah. She can give me the some new warm-up exercises. when you're too old, you know, just can't go lace them up and run out there. You got to stretch out a little bit.
Yeah, I need to stretch out a lot. you spend enough time in Florida, you'll probably run across Vinny Viola, and he might get you hooked up.
Oh, that would be good. I haven't looked up the local ice rink around there yet.
Yeah, you know, the reason I brought up John Sakura's name earlier, John is, of course, the owner of Hillendale Farm here in Lexington, and he has an ice rink that he built for his kids on his farm. And as Jude pointed out, his nephew is drafted by the Blackhawks. So, and John played it. I think he played at Michigan State, if I'm not mistaken. So he played at a very high level too. And he likes to have pickup games down here in Kentucky. So maybe keep that in mind if you make it to the Bluegrass.
Oh, well, that would be great.
Scott Becker with us
I'll
here.
I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, you definitely will. He's with us here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Scott, let me take you back to August 28th of last year, a very special day for you. You recorded career victory number 1,000 at Fairmount Park with a horse named DeRapper. Tell me a little bit about that day.
Yes, I'm sure he was a big favorite that day. We figured he would win and get to it. Sometimes when you get to certain goals like that, it seems like they take forever. You get stuck on a number or something, say it was 998, and you think you'll never get to win 1,000. Now you're thinking, waiting for a win 2,000 now.
Yeah, you set your sights on the next goal. Were you close to 1,000 for a while?
No, I don't believe so. Business slowed down a little bit before that during the summer. I wasn't getting horses in very much up in Arlington. I was having just one of those times where the right races weren't going. Weren't getting horses in, and like I said, the business in Illinois was so slow. We were used to winning over 100 races a year for a few years, and we weren't able to get there this year. Our starts were down probably 150 to 200 starts less than we had been doing the last couple years before.
Wow, that's a lot. That can be quite a financial hit, especially when you've got the purses at Arlington are a little light.
Yes, it is.
You know, Scott, you mentioned something a moment ago. You said some of the races didn't go and all of those kind of things. And that can be frustrating for a trainer when you have a horse that's ready to go, you enter them and the race doesn't go. There are people listening right now that don't have any idea what that term means when we say the race didn't go. So for people listening, explain that. What does that mean and why is it so frustrating for a trainer?
Well, you know, generally in these condition book nowadays, they probably write race your horses eligible for every 3 weeks, and when that race doesn't go and you're training and you're working towards that race, and say they bring it back the next year to go, and you're a week later now, you're 4 weeks from running, then you're five, then you're looking at another track to go to try to find the race, then you've got to ship, it all becomes a big burden.
Yeah, and the minute you go to ship, the race goes at your home track.
the next week, every time. Yeah. The next week, it goes every time.
Never fails. Yeah, it's so frustrating.
With a short field.
Yeah. Why do we do this for a living? It's amazing.
Why does somebody want to train racehorses for a living, Scott? That's a good question.
I don't know. I guess I came into it going to the track with family as a kid, and it just became a passion for me. I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it. I felt like I could see things in horses and do different things and bring the best out of them. I just felt like I had a little bit of a natural ability to do that.
Do you ever feel like you're going to work, or is it just a pleasure every morning?
No, I. You know what? It doesn't. It feels like a pleasure to me. You know, it helps when you have an owner or owners that basically give you the reins and let you run the operation as you see fit to the best of your ability, and let you run horses where you think they need to run. That makes it a pleasure. So I cannot speak for everyone else.
Yeah, and that's something that we've heard multiple times over the history of this program, too, that when you have an owner that you develop a great relationship with and they realize that, hey, you know what you're doing when it comes to training horses, and they stay out of your way, it makes it so much easier. What was the Charlie Whittingham quote, Jude, that you always tell me about?
Owners should be treated like mushrooms, kept in the dark and covered with lots of manure.
Scott, do you agree with Charlie Whittingham?
Don't answer that.
Yeah, I've heard some stories.
Except for his owner, Bill Sturitz, who has been very, very good to him for a very long time. And it does sound like that's become it's kind of transcended the owner-trainer relationship. Is that a good way to say it, Scott? Has it gone to another level?
Yeah, he's been great to me. I have no complaints. We've never had no complaints with each other. He believes in me, and I just try to do the best I can for him. And I think with what we have to work with, where we're at, we do pretty well. I would like to do better. Always would like to do better. And hopefully that might happen this year.
Yeah, he's a fairly optimistic guy. I mean, he's 84 years old, I read, and he's buying all these young horses, and you're getting them ready for him. So that's fantastic that he loves the game so much, and he can see himself, you know, in the future living more of his dream.
Yeah, he does. It's a very passion of his, the horse racing. I mean, he could do a lot of other things, but he stays involved and always hoping for something good to happen in his home area, keep the track going for the people around here. So I think as long as he's involved, everything will be okay.
Well, again, that's owner Bill Sturitz, and he is the primary owner for our guest tonight on Trainer Talk. That is Scott Becker. We're going to get to a quick commercial break. We will come back. Second half of the program, we'll look back on some of the memorable moments in Scott's career, including a few graded stakes victories he's been fortunate enough to be part of. We'll tell you all about those next when we return. It's Trainer Talk presented by Fazley Tipton.
Nominate now to the 2019 Fazek Tipton Gulfstream Selected 2-Year-Old and Training Sale. The Gulfstream Sale was the number one ranked 2-year-old sale in 2018 by ROR on pinhooks and percentage of profitable pinhooks, with an average of more than $385,000 and a median of $295,000. And more horses sold for $1 million or more than any other 2-year-old sale in America last year. It's the Fazek Tipton Gulfstream Sale, March 27th, 2019. Nominate now at FazekTipton.com.
Gulfstream Park's championship meet runs December 1st through March 31st with live racing Wednesday through Sunday, with the $9 million Pegasus World Cup set for January the 26th, a program which also features the first running of the $7 million Pegasus Turf Cup and the return of the Pegasus World Cup Betting Championship on Friday, January 25th and Saturday, January 26th. The $1 million Florida Derby on March 30th will wrap up the championship meet at Gulfstream Park. Visit GulfstreamPark.com.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at BloomRacing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best. And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Here's the quarter pole, then Astrologist, Discreetness, Why Congrats Given, Air America, Cordage Hard Ridden, Oh No, Not You Again, Last to Make the Top of the Arlington Stretch, it's Showgood still. Half mile, 46 and 1/2 seconds, Showgood with a furlong pole in sight, Showgood, five lengths to the good, Will Munnings, Missile Bomb, Van Dam makes a split, cocked and loaded, one paced for the final half furlong, Showgood, Showgood in the Arlington Washington Futurity. Showgood scores. Van Dam at Big God second. Missile Bomb was third. It's close for fourth. Discreetness with Will Munnings. Then cocked and loaded. Astrologist was after that.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. Happy to have you back with us to the sounds of the voice of Arlington. John G. Dooley with the call of the Arlington Washington Futurity in 2015, won by Showgood, who is trained by tonight's guest, Scott Becker. We're going to talk to Scott about that victory and some of his other greatest stakes victories here in the second half of the program. Want to remind you, though, if you did miss any portion of this program or any of our Trainer Talk shows, they're all there for you on our website, horseracingradio.net. So head back over, check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows at horseracingradio.net. And remember to follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter and Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Big race there from Showgood back in 2015, one of three greatest stakes victories tallied by Scott Becker, who has saddled more than 1,000 winners in his career that began on his own in 2009. Scott, little trip down memory lane for you. What goes through your mind when you hear John's call of Showgood winning the Futurity?
Yeah, Showgood was a horse that I had seen work actually at Fairmont Park for another trainer here. And the first time I seen him, they brought him up to Chicago and did some paddock schooling. I really liked the horse. He looked, really stood out for not, you know, he was just an average bred, Illinois bred horse, but he did look tremendous. And they had run the horse, and I believe he ran second the first time, yes. And they got a lot of calls on the horse. And I don't know if it was Howland or somebody in the West Coast was supposed to buy the horse, and the deal fell through. And the next day, the owner just come to me and said, hey, would your owner be interested in buying a horse? They've been offering me this and that. And, you know, I got my owner right to the track, and we bought it that day.
Oh, wow.
Wow. So we just kind of fell into that horse. You know, I didn't chase them to try buying them. They just fell in their laps. And when we got him, I was looking at the Arlington Washington Futurity race, you know. Hopefully we'd break his maiden and go right into it.
Yeah, and it certainly worked out just the way you planned with that maiden win and then that win in the Arlington Washington Futurity. When did you kind of get a sense? I know you liked him from the first time you saw him, but when did you kind of get a sense that, you know, he could be greatest stakes caliber?
Well, he seemed that he just displayed this natural speed he had, which I always like, and he just kept to whatever you would give him in the mornings, he would give you back more. But the distance limitations I could see he had after doing a few different things in the mornings that wasn't going to go on to the next level.
So you mainly kept him sprinting around one turn, that kind of thing?
Yes. I think I took him to Oakland one winter, and I think we ran him in maybe the Smarty Jones at a mile, and it just wasn't working out. Two turns.
Yeah. Yeah.
With him. And I think he developed some pharyngitis then, and that was basically it for two turns.
Yeah, didn't he win? What was the stake at Turfway? Was it the WEBN stakes or one of those stakes up at Turfway that he won?
Yes, I think that was 6.5.
Yeah.
Yep. Yes.
And then you took him to Keeneland, too. I think he ran in the Woodford stakes back in 16. Yeah, I think that's right.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
That's 5.5
on the turf.
Mm. Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Well, good horse. Show good. Illinois bred, trained by Scott Becker, who is our guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here tonight. Scott, that was your third greatest stakes victory of your career. The first one came in 2009 in the Grade 3 Hawthorne Derby with a horse named Proceed B. Tell me about Proceed B.
Proceed B was cut out to be a very nice horse. But to keep him from going through the next level, I think he had too much of the Bernstein in him. He just didn't have a very good head on him. He ran some good races, though.
Yeah, what, 20 wins from
Derby.
52 starts. That's pretty good.
Yes, yes, yes. But he was just a cut below the very good horses.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, you mentioned the mind, right? You said he didn't have a very good head on him. And so much of being a horse trainer is not only about the physical aspect of training horses, but the mental aspect too, isn't it?
Yeah, yes, it can be a challenge with some of these. And he was very much, which, you know, a lot of guys know, a lot of Bernstein horses had a lot of different attitudes to them. And he was one of them.
So he was quirky and difficult to train. What kind of tactics did you have to employ to get him to settle down?
You know, he was very timid a lot. He would be real timid in traffic. In the mornings, very nervous. Sweating a lot, you know. There's always something going on with him.
Is there anything you can do as a horse trainer there, Scott, to kind of try to alleviate some of those problems when they get to the racetrack in the afternoon?
Yeah, well, there's only so much. And, you know, you get there in the paddock, you know, and they start losing it. There's only so much schooling you can do over there.
It's kind of amazing that he won 20 races on in 52 starts. That's quite a record.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he had the body, all the everything, the tools there except the mind.
Yeah, and even so, Scott, and maybe it's a credit to you and what you were able to do with him, and I think the 20 wins speaks to that too, but the fact that when he was on the Derby trail, and he was, let's not forget that, when he ran in the Lane's End Stakes, that Grade 2 up at Turfway, he was third from the 12 hole that day behind the Bill Mott trained Hold Me Back, who was owned by Windstar Farm and one of the more highly regarded runners that they had that year. He was third and not beaten all that far, really, I guess about five lengths or so. That was a big effort for Proceed B.
Yeah, he'd win a race or two over there at Turfway. He liked the track. He actually, you know, that horse, you know, he went on three different surfaces, I believe, you know, from poly track to turf to the dirt. So he was pretty versatile.
We saw him in the Arlington Million, too, back in 2011. He took a shot in the Arlington Million. Didn't run all that well that day, but he ran okay.
No, mid-pack. I think he was seventh by 10 or so, something like that. But we were there. He was doing good then. We gave it a shot.
How cool would it be for you, an Illinois native, to saddle a horse that wins the Arlington Million?
Yeah, that would be, I guess that's what the fellow guy I know named Roger Bergman felt like.
Yeah.
With the pizza man.
Yeah. Boy, that was a day. That was a crazy day. Yeah. That crowd went wild. That was so cool. Cost me the pick four, but I didn't care. I loved that race so much. It was so cool to watch that horse win and see everybody, you know, in Chicago going nuts. It was almost like the Cubs winning the World Series.
Yeah, exactly. I was rooting for him myself.
Yeah, were you there that day, Scott?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, it was a special day. We had the broadcast here on the network, and it was definitely a special day, and it was cool to see an Illinois bred win the Illinois Derby, win the Arlington Million. That's a special thing, especially when you think about the international cast that was assembled to take him on. He beat the world, really.
Yes, he did. It was a great feat.
The best part was watching all the English guys in anguish. They were so upset.
I bet.
Yeah, that was tough. Your second greatest stakes victory came a few years later, 2013. It was the Hanschen Cup at where's that? Is that Hawthorne? The Hanschen Cup, or is that Arlington?
Arlington.
Arlington, okay. And Hoagie.
One turn mile.
Right? Hoagie was the victor?
Yes, Hoagie, yes.
He was a cool horse.
He's still my favorite horse of all time.
Really?
Yes, he is.
How come?
I still don't like losing him to this day.
Yeah, when you get a horse like that that's so special, it's hard to, you know, kind of, I guess, say goodbye, even if it's not on your own terms, right?
Yeah.
Well, tell me a little bit about Hoagie. Yeah, what made him so special?
Oh, he just has his own natural personality, and that horse, everybody loves that horse. Even probably the connections that have him now, I can't remember the guy's name, Michael Lee with the Mike Maker. I'm sure they enjoy that horse.
He took you on a pretty good journey too, Scott, when you think back to, you know, running him in Keeneland and in the Breeders' Cup, and you know, you went to some the big dances with him. What might be your favorite Hoagie moment?
Oh, shoot. I don't know. I really don't have one specific moment with him. I just liked having him in the barn.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
I made sure I was the one grazing him all the time myself. I enjoyed being around him. And I think maybe if that horse was in a different area, he would have made a lot more money than he's had. His opportunities were limited for a long time in the Midwest. And a few bad trips and a few bad races, he just got beat in some good races.
Yeah, and I think I misspoke when I said he took you to the Breeders' Cup. I think that was with his new connections back in 2017 at Del Mar.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, then, as the trainer of a horse that you said is your favorite horse, to watch him in the Breeders' Cup, what's that feeling like? I'm sure you're still cheering for him, but it's got to be somewhat bittersweet.
Yeah, it is. I wanted to take him the year before. We had an invitation to go to Dubai the year before with him, and I kind of wish I would have went ahead and took him there.
Yeah, how come you made the decision not to go?
Well, ultimately, those trips, I think, are so hard on those horses, and my operation really wasn't set up to be doing that. They count on me, the owner does, everywhere, to oversee everything and to be gone for a while over there. And there and with the horse, we just thought it was best not to go.
Yeah, probably a good decision, because you know, you are an integral part of the whole operation. And then, you know, not only – it's not just going, but, you know, you don't want to just go and not run – you know, to the top of your game, or, you know, I mean, you can get beat in your own backyard. So, I mean, we all know how hard it is to win a race anywhere. So to take 6 months or so to get your horse back and recovered, it really sometimes doesn't make a lot of sense to go.
Yeah, that's what I felt like. To go over there and to beat those horses and be competitively was a very long shot. And then I was thinking the recovery afterwards, coming back, and usually it seems like a lot of those horses miss time, especially it had been his first time traveling that far. I just thought it wasn't a good idea.
Trainer Scott Becker, our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Scott, quite often we'll hear a golfer talk about the greatest shot that they ever hit, or we'll hear a baseball player talk about the greatest swing they ever made when they hit a home run or whatever it might be. Same thing with a quarterback, the greatest throw they ever made. So for you as a horse trainer, what would Scott Becker consider to be the greatest training feat that you've ever done, the greatest accomplishment, even if it's with a horse that maybe a lot of people haven't heard of?
There's a horse that his name was Nagy's Piggy Bank. He was a very top echelon runner on the Chicago circuit. He was competing in the State Bred Stakes, and he had bowed in a race pulling up. So he was a gilling, so we took him to the farm and was just going to let him live out his life there. It was a very severe low bow. And then about a year after that, I'm watching this horse with another run the fence line like you wouldn't believe. So I told the owner, I said, maybe we'll take him back to Fairmont and fool around with him a little bit. He was only like six still then. I said, if an injury pops back up, anything severe, we'll stop on him. Well, he made it back to the race, I think it was 2 years later, and I think the horse won probably 7 or 8 of like 12 starts.
Wow.
So.
That's pretty cool.
I always remember that one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a special story. That first start back, Scott, when you got him back to the races again, going into the starting gate, I'm sure there were some butterflies and some anxious moments on your part. What was that moment like?
Yeah, well, I was thinking, don't let anything happen. And he's done everything in the morning. He's held up to all the tests. And then I think I ran him for like 8,000. And I was thinking, I hope they don't claim him.
Another one you would hate to lose.
Yeah, he just, and the horse never took a bad step one time after that. They end up getting claimed, and they sent it. I can't remember who got him out of, they claimed him out of Chicago and sent him to Del Mar. I can't remember if Hess had him or who, but he never did any good.
That to me is the sum of everything that being a horse trainer is all about, right? That story you just told, Scott, and we've had so many trainers on this program over the years, and they'll all have that special moment in their career, but that one story you just shared, you're a horse trainer. You are there to train the racehorse, to keep the racehorse healthy, to bring them to the racetrack, to compete at the peak of their form cycle, and all of that was rolled into one with that one horse right there. That to me is what being a horse trainer is all about. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah, just because of the time. I think we trained. I think that horse was in training maybe, like I said, for 6 or 7 months before he ran, and he was off like 2 years, and the injury he had, you're not supposed to come back from. It wasn't good, and we wasn't planning on it. Like I said, it was never a plan. This horse, he was retired. So that's what makes it special about it.
Yeah, sometimes they tell you when they're ready to come back to the track. Like they miss the activity at the barn, just like any other athlete. You hear guys that retire and then you know, the next year they're going, oh, I really retired too soon. I miss it. I miss the action. And the horses are the same way.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, like I said, I got an owner who, if I want to turn a horse out and time, you know, he doesn't say a word.
Yep.
Give it how much time they need, so.
Yep, that's special. That's really special. Scott Becker is our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here tonight. Scott trains primarily in Illinois, but has now expanded where he's running horses in New Orleans the past couple of winters and now down at Gulfstream Park for the championship meet. And as you heard earlier in the program, planning on staying in Florida, South Florida, when Gulfstream Park West resumes their schedule after the championship meet. Scott, thank goodness for Wikipedia, because I mentioned earlier that you're a native of Belleville, Illinois. Well, I spent some time researching Belleville, Illinois, and realized that the population is roughly 41,000 persons. It's located just across the Mississippi River from St. Louis, the sister city to Paderborn, Germany. And I'm going to assume then that the German-American population in Belleville is quite significant. Is that true?
Yes, I think, yeah, I think it has been for a number of years.
You know, the other thing I read is that
they have their German fest there and things like that.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it was once known as the stove capital of the world. Is that right?
What was that?
That's what I said. The stove capital of the world is what, according to Wikipedia, is one of the things.
Yeah,
that...
Well, I don't know nothing about that.
How about this one for you? The first brewery in Illinois was established in Belleville, and in 1868, and I'm going to butcher the name, Gustav Galitz founded the candy company that is now known as Jelly Belly.
Oh, really?
How about that?
Yeah.
That's true?
Yeah, I do know something about that in the beer. Yes, I did.
Well, it's got to be a bunch of German people if they started a brewery, that's for sure.
Beer and Jelly Bellies. How can that be bad, Scott?
Yeah.
Great combination.
Well, maybe they just moved over to St. Louis to Anheuser-Busch now.
Yeah.
That's right, too. Yeah, just across the river. So what's the future hold for Scott Becker? What are the plans moving forward, Scott?
Well, like I said, I'll keep a string of horses in Chicago all summer and then the other half down in Florida and see what comes about.
And any of your 2-year-olds looking promising? Are you excited about the crop you have?
Well, you know, they're just turned 2-year-olds now in January, but I did do a little light galloping on them for a couple weeks at the track, and I like the way a few of them go. We'll see. We'll see when we get up working about at least a half mile or so.
Are you the kind of guy that brings them along slowly, and are you somebody that likes to have them fired up to go first time out?
You know what? I've done it different ways. It just depends on the... Some are just ready to go, and I think some, no matter what you do, always need that first race experience. I don't know why, but it just seems like second, third start, you know what you got.
Yeah, well, that's the next question I was going to ask you, Scott, is when you start working with those young horses, at what point do you start to find out if they can really run or not?
Well, when you get in, I try to get in some good company and get them matched up right, for one. And I really think you got to work a little further. You know, a lot of horses could work good 3/8, half mile. I think, you know, really further, you can really tell if you got something or not.
Yeah, he's trainer Scott Becker, and he's done a tremendous job with his operation to date. He's continuing to work with those young horses and continuing to develop them for his big owner, Bill Sturitz, and, of course, all those individuals that want to get in touch with Scott, maybe get him a horse or two, they can do that and reach out to him. He'll be down at Gulfstream Park this winter, and he'll be back in Illinois, I'm sure, as well. Scott, really appreciate the visit, my friend. It's been a lot of fun to have you on Trainer Talk with us here tonight, and all the best moving forward, and good luck down at Gulfstream.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
All right, thanks, Scott. Scott Becker here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. And don't forget, if you missed any portion of that show, just head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast at your leisure. And you can also get more updates and information on everything that we do here on the network by following us on social media, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook and at HRRN on Twitter. I do love that story that he told Jude about Maggie's. What was it? Maggie's? Oh, I'm going to forget her name
Maggie's.
Now. Maggie's. Maggie's something. Yeah. Oh, gosh. I meant to write that name down to that horse that he said was his greatest training feat. And it certainly was. I mean, a horse that bows and not supposed to come back. And all of a sudden shows signs that, as you said, wants to be back at the racetrack. Those horses are so cool.
Yeah. No, there's nothing like it. I mean, you get a horse like that and you really appreciate thoroughbreds and how tough they are and how much they're bred to run. You know, we sometimes take that for granted, but that's what they're bred to do, and they want to do it.
Did you ever have one in your 20-year career that maybe looked like there was no shot of getting back to the races, and all of a sudden here they come?
Well, I had a couple of them, but the one that I always think about was a horse called Velamo, and I was in bed one night. It was like 10 o'clock or something. Vic Tabak called me. He was Mel from the Alice Show.
Yeah,
remember Vic Tabak?
Yeah, sure.
So he had owned a full brother to this horse, and he goes, "Jude, I want to claim a horse tomorrow." I said, "Oh, okay, Vic, who do you want?" You know, and I'm like half asleep. I probably went to bed like at 9 o'clock, horse trainer time. And he goes, Velamo. I put the money in the office today. Just go over and claim him. I want him. I said, "Okay, fine." So I watched him jog over, and he looked great, but he had big old boots on. You couldn't see his legs or anything. So drop the slip. They take the boots off right before the race, and he's got a big old bow tendon, not looking good, you know. So we got him, of course, and I don't know if he won that day, but he ran a good race. I think he might have finished third, and get him back to the barn, and he was a mess. And I won 6 races in a row with him. The vet actually told me that he would consider putting him down because he was so bad. And then, like, 3 months later, ran him at Del Mar, and he went on a 6-race winning streak.
That's
he was
what
a cool horse.
Game is all about.
Yeah, he would cough all the time too, like he smoked 6 packs a day. he was a mess, that horse, but he was game as they come. I loved him.
Wow, great story, and so many great stories that we've been able to bring your way here on Trainer Talk over the years. Really appreciate everyone being with us here tonight. Don't forget, check out the podcast and the podcast of all of our programs, including Jock Talk from last night with Steve Cawthon and Georgie Velasquez. Together, the 1978 Triple Crown relived with those two and host Christina McManigal. Do that at horseracingradio.net. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.